must unlearn what you have learned.
Hello there. Come here, my little friend. Don't be afraid.
Away with your weapon! I mean you no harm!
Kill him. Kill him now. Do it.
You failed me. Jedi, by my father.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the first ever live Shooting the Sith. I am your host, Robert Slavinsky, and I do have a couple guests with me today. One of them was unable to make it that we had planned. Hopefully he can show up later on, but if he doesn't, that is okay. But today we are going to sit down and we're going to talk and discuss the sequel trilogy of Star Wars. We're going to talk about the good, the bad, what we liked, what we didn't like, what the future of Star Wars looks like as well. So I hope you all are ready for this. I'm excited to bring Shooting the Sith back. It's been a few months since I've done anything, actually since May. And back then I was only doing audio podcasts. Now I'm kind of moving into the video aspect of it, seeing how that works. Hopefully more people will definitely watch and follow along with us. With that said, I do have a couple of guests. Like I said, they come from theculturenerd.org. Great site. I love that site. They do some great things over there. I've had one of these guys on quite a few times on Bridging the Geekdoms, and now I'm bringing them over to Shooting the Sith. So everybody say hello to Marcus. What's going on, man?
Not much.
And I got another person from The Culture Nerd who I've actually never spoken with except for about two minutes ago. And he is a good guy. He seems to be doing a lot of good things over at The Culture Nerd himself. But I'm looking forward to talking with him here and getting to know who he is and his love for Star Wars. Welcome, Sean. What's going on, man?
Hey, man. How's it going?
What's going on? So I just kind of want to get into it here because there is a lot to talk about. So to do that, I want to start off here because I'd like to kind of cover what happened prior to the sequel trilogy. So the year was 2012. Star Wars fans around the world at this point had accepted the unlikeliness of ever seeing another live-action film in a galaxy far, far away. 2005 seems so long ago, and while the prequels were still highly criticized, Revenge of the Sith, the final installment of the prequels, was a high note of that trilogy and appeared to be a fitting end to the beloved saga. That was until October 30th of 2012, when it was announced Disney had acquired Lucasfilm from George Lucas and that another film, Episode 7, would be made. While there were many questions regarding the ability of Disney being able to continue the saga in a way that would honor what so many had fallen in love with, we were told not to worry, as super producer Kathleen Kennedy would be taking the reins at Lucasfilm. As we got closer and closer to the release of the highly anticipated start of the Star Wars sequel trilogy, cast and crew began to be announced. Originally, Michael Arndt, known for Toy Story 3, Little Miss Sunshine, and The Hunger Games: Catching Fire, was brought in to write the film based off of the outlines George Lucas had created. Sometime later, it was announced that J.J. Abrams, despite refusing the opportunity at first, was brought on to direct. However, this is where things began to get a little bit cagey. The creative team behind the new Star Wars trilogy was not keen on what Art had written to this point, so Kathleen Kennedy appointed J.J. Abrams, alongside the Empire Strikes Back writer Lawrence Kasdan, to take a shot at the script. According to Disney CEO Bob Iger, George Lucas, who was hopeful to stay on as an advisor, was unhappy with the direction everything was going and stepped away completely from the process. Despite some unfortunate events, like Harrison Ford breaking his leg on set and the constant rewrites during the filming, Episode 7, The Force Awakens, released on December 18th, 2015, raking in more than $2 billion worldwide in its run. This was a hell of a start for the new trilogy, and while the reaction was mixed, things seemed to be bright with Rian Johnson helming Episode 8 and Colin Trevorrow taking on Episode 9. Now, before we really get into everything, I thought it was important to just be reminded of what happened prior to getting the sequel trilogy. I think it is kind of setting the stage of what transpired over the better part of the decade where these movies were coming out. So I kind of want to explain to anybody who's listening or watching that what we're going to do, we're actually going to break this down into five categories: directing, writing, casting, the way the films fit into the overall narrative and story, and what the future looks like after the sequel trilogy. So I think at this point we can kind of get started with everything. The first thing I want to obviously bring up is, you know, the directors of the Star Wars sequels. And we're going to get into a lot here, Marcus and Sean, about everything. And I'm sure you guys have a lot to talk about, but let's try and stay on point. If we go off on tangents, that's fine. I'm okay with that. But the better we stay on track, I think the better it'll be here. Now, we're going to talk about the directors right now of the Star Wars sequels. What are your thoughts? I mean, originally, J.J. Abrams was brought in for Episode 7. Ryan Johnson was then brought in for 8, and then Colin Trevorrow was tagged to do Episode 9. When you first heard that lineup of directors, what was your thoughts on all of that? Anybody can start. Whoever wants to go.
Go ahead, Marcus.
I have some really strong opinions about the directors. I think J.J. Abrams started off strong, you know. He kind of brought us back to that galaxy far, far away. Some people hadn't been fans of the franchise since maybe the prequels. Maybe they gave up halfway through the prequels. I don't know. But I think he did bring him back to, like, the roots, help people remember what made them love Star Wars from the very beginning. And I think that Force Awakens really really reminded people what they wanted to see from Star Wars. But I think the problem started happening when The Last Jedi came around, and I think there was like a butting of heads of directors. I will say they're both amazing directors, but they just had very different styles and ideas for the franchise, which I know we'll touch on when we get to like writing and how that fits into the story and whatnot. But like, in terms of directors, it felt like it was kind of like a tennis match. Like, it kind of bounced from J.J. Abrams to Ryan Johnson and back to J.J. Abrams again. It was, I don't know. Like, visually, I liked what they did with the movies, especially Ryan Johnson. I will give him that, even though I don't like Ryan Johnson as a director for the trilogy. But overall, I think the problem with directors is what definitely hurt the trilogy from my perspective, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, Sean? What's your opinion on that whole side of things?
Well, personally, I didn't particularly like the prequels.
Wow.
The casting and acting of Anakin Skywalker, not for me. So I kind of left it really with the sequels, the prequels, and I was kind of like, probably not going to come back to it. I'll just ignore those ones, and I'll just watch the originals. And then they announced the sequels, and I was like, are we going to have a repeat of the same situation? And then J.J. Abrams basically just rewrote with new characters the original. So I was like, okay, I'm fine with that. Let's go with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good film. I liked it. Then Ryan Johnson comes aboard, and I thought Last Jedi, excellent. My personal favorite. I know a lot of people really don't like it, and that they don't think that Ryan Johnson is particularly a good fit for the Star Wars franchise. But for me, everything in that film was exactly what I wanted it to be. And then for The Rise of Skywalker, went back to JJ eventually anyway. And it was still good, but he kind of went back to what he was trying to do in the first film, rather than have a sort of a continuation of where Ryan Johnson had gone. So there was a lot of butting heads, and it did affect the trilogy, the saga in general, but I don't know. It felt like J.J. Abrams just wanted to remake the originals.
Yeah, yeah. I totally agree with that sentiment.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, I remember when the search for the directors was going on back in like 2013, 2014, and time frame around there. I think it was 2013 to be exact. And I remember names like Matthew Vaughn, Jon Favreau, Ben Affleck even popped up at one point when they were talking about possible directors for The Force Awakens, or Episode 7, as it was known at the time. And I was excited about a lot of those names. I would still love to see a Matthew Vaughn Star Wars. I think it would be a fantastic, you know, approach for a Star Wars movie. I mean, he's done some pretty cool things when it comes to the X-Men, and he did The Kingsman also and stuff like that. Like, I think it would be fantastic. But when they went to J.J. Abrams, I think a lot of people were surprised because he just got off of doing two Star Trek films. And they're like, you're going to cross the paths of Star Trek and Star Wars? Yeah. How can you do that? And, you know, a lot of people forgot at the time, or didn't know at the time, I should say, that J.J. Abrams was molded by Star Wars. I mean, he was a student of Spielberg and Lucas, in a sense, growing up. And really, when it comes down to it, he was probably the best choice that they had at the time. He was still a young director, because to that point, he did three, maybe four films. He did Mission Impossible, Super 8, and then the two Star Trek movies. So it's not like he was a huge, huge director, but he did some pretty big movies and pretty big hits. It was actually a good idea. And I liked the idea of him coming in, because I liked his visual style that he already put on the screen for Star Trek. Everybody makes fun of his lens flares, and absolutely, I think it's a little outrageous how often and how many he uses in a movie, but I was fine with that. I felt like, you know what, JJ's going to take this film, and he's going to be the best man to start it, because we know and we love his mystery box form of storytelling. He's just really good at it. He kind of failed with that on the second Star Trek, but everything prior, and even his writing that he's done when it comes to Lost and what was the TV show he was on? Is it Alias? He does an amazing job with writing. So I knew that he was going to bring that to the table. I was excited about that. I was even more excited when Michael Arndt was doing the script. And I know we're going to get into writers here in a second, but I understood when JJ came on that they were going to go that route and kind of give him the writing as well, because of what he has done in the past with a lot of his films. So from a director's standpoint, when it came to The Force Awakens, I thought it was a fantastic, fantastic idea to put him up there. Now, when it came to Rian Johnson, I only saw one movie of his prior to watching The Last Jedi, or even, I can't say prior to watching Last Jedi, but prior to it being announced that he was going to direct Episode 8. And that was Looper. Looper, freaking fantastic movie, if you ask me. Absolutely fantastic. But that's not what sold me on Rian Johnson. I want to say it was in 2013. So this is before he was announced as director. He did a podcast with Kevin Smith. I think it was either Smoothie Makers or Smodcast, one of the two podcasts that Kevin Smith does. One of the 900 podcasts that Kevin Smith does, I should say. But he was on there with Kevin Smith, and he spoke about, just like J.J. Abrams, he was a student of Star Wars. He got into film and got into writing all because of what George Lucas had created with Star Wars. So to me, I was like, that's what you want. That's who you want. That's the kind of person you want continuing this saga. You know, if you can't have George Lucas, if George Lucas is like, hey, I'm done, I'm stepping away, you want people who are passionate and love the material and the franchise. So again, I thought when they announced him, that's another win. Colin Trevorrow, I was a little more meh on. And the reason being is I wasn't a big fan of Jurassic World. It was good, but it seemed like that was the only reason why they tabbed him, was because of the success of Jurassic World and how big it was in the world. And I think they were kind of just like, hey, he's a big director right now. Let's snatch him up so we have him and nobody else can have him right now. That kind of thing. So, and I wasn't really, I didn't know much about Colin at the time. So while I was kind of like, whatever, we'll see what happens, I wasn't excited about it. But when it came down to it, the pick of directors, I thought, hey, I mean, two out of three were home runs in my book. Now, when JJ did episode 7, and I know everybody sits here and says, oh, he just tried to rehash A New Hope and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. He did, to a certain extent. I completely agree with that. I can't deny that. I mean, come on, you got Starkiller Base comparing it to the Death Star. You have, you know, the battle over Starkiller Base, just like the battle of the Death Star, and finding a lost soul on a desert planet, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it all adds up and is being connected similar to the way that A New Hope was done. But it added some more elements to it and some flair that I think was really exciting and really, really interesting moving forward. Obviously, we were going to get the legacy characters. We were going to get your Harrison Fords, Mark Hamills, and Carrie Fishers, and Peter Mayhews, and Kenny Bakers, and all that kind of stuff. You know, that was the plan, to bring all the legacy characters, Anthony Daniels, back as they could. But they didn't focus on that. And that is where my issues kind of came in with the sequel trilogy, because that's what everybody wanted. You know, everybody wanted the legacy characters and to see what they've accomplished and what they've done. But that's not to say what they decided to do wasn't a good idea, because I think, like I said, they made some bold decisions and some bold moves with the sequel trilogy. So before we get into the writing, anybody want to talk about anything else when it comes to directors, or did we kind of cover it all at this point?
I mean, for me, going back to Rian Johnson, he directed, in my opinion, the single best hour of television in the history of television, which is Breaking Bad, season 5, episode 14. Ozymandias. Now, I don't know if you guys have seen that, but I'm talking like real class act.
I watched Breaking Bad. I caught everything, but I was not aware, and I didn't pay attention to who directed what episode. I kind of was just like, hey, you know, I'm watching Breaking Bad. Cool. I've also had a thing when it comes to TV shows. A lot of times with a lot of TV shows, I'm not saying Breaking Bad was one like this, but a lot of TV shows, when it has a director, the director's just there in name. They don't really do much or add much to the actual show. I didn't really pay attention to Rian Johnson's episode or episodes on Breaking Bad, because I think he did more than one, didn't he?
He did Manifest Death. Oh, sorry. He did Fly, 51, and Ozymandias.
Okay. And you're right. I mean, Rian Johnson is a great director. And with The Last Jedi, my issues with that movie have nothing to do with direction, with cinematography, or anything like that. Mm-hmm. To me, that is what actually puts the movie up here for me, that I'm just like, wow, like, this is a beautifully shot movie. There's a lot of moments in the film I really, really enjoy. For me, where that movie gets bogged down and where it kind of drops on the list for me is its writing. And we'll get into that in a moment. But and obviously, we know Colin Trevorrow never actually got to do a Star Wars film. It came back to J.J. Abrams. But I think that discussion is going to kind of be better had when it comes to the writing of the sequels as a whole. Mm-hmm. But Marcus, I mean, any rebuttal, anything you want to push back at me or Sean? Because we both kind of took big stances. I mean, Sean's huge with Rian Johnson. I'm huge with JJ. What are your thoughts?
Okay, I mean, I will admit, like, he's a very good visual director. Like, as much as I didn't like The Last Jedi, like, narratively speaking, like, just the way it looked, like, so many gorgeous shots in that movie. I think it has to be one of the best-looking Star Wars movies, if not the best. Like, remember that shot where they, like, split the Star Destroyer in half? throughout hyperspace, or, you know, just how cool the throne room looks for Snoke. It's just like, he has an eye for, I guess he has an eye for film, but like, substance-wise, I didn't think it was there, which surprised me, because when I watched Knives Out, I actually really loved that movie. It was just really good. I think what Rian Johnson needed was to work with characters that weren't established. He needed to make his own characters. I think what he struggled with there was working with already established characters. I think that was the issue there. But yeah, and then going back to Colin Trevorrow as well, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but geez, I really would have loved to see his movie. Just hearing what he had planned for it, it sounded really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Really? All right. Well, I mean, I agree when it comes to the Trevorrow stuff. I think his leaked script, I think it was just a first pass that leaked of his Duel of the Fates movie script that would have been episode 9 was absolutely phenomenal. And I am upset that we never got to see it. I think it would have actually been better than The Rise of Skywalker. But that brings us to this. The writers of the Star Wars sequels. And, you know, like I stated earlier in the beginning of the episode, when all of this stuff was getting started, George Lucas handed, he was like, here's an outline for 3 more movies. Here you go, an outline. Kathy Kennedy, Lucasfilm, whoever the creative forces were behind Star Wars at the time, decided to just throw that out. They're like, nope, we don't want it. Get rid of it. We're going to do our own thing. It seems like that happened when J.J. Abrams came into the mix, which I think is kind of interesting because of how much of a fan and how much he respected George Lucas. I mean, he even met with Lucas prior to, starting writing or taking on the film and doing anything with it. So it was kind of shocking that we find out once he came in, that's when they kind of like, oh, we're going to get rid of Lucas's ideas and make our own. And to me, in my opinion, if there's a fault to be had with The Force Awakens, it's that right there. It's that they said, you know what, we know better than the creator of this saga on where this should go. We know better. We're not going to listen to what he has to say, and we're going to do our own thing. And I think that that's kind of where everything really started to fall apart. And again, I'm not going to sit here and say that the sequel trilogy is a mess, because it isn't a mess. There are some great things that have come in the sequel trilogy, but the issues that it has, I think, stem and start from that moment where they decided, sorry, George, we don't want your stuff. Not what we want to do. We're going to do our own thing. You guys agree?
Yeah, this is a conversation I have a lot with my friends who are also Star Wars fans. I always like to remind them, oh, George Lucas had a plan, but Disney didn't follow through with it. And I do agree. I think that was a problem there. I think George Lucas had an idea, but at the same time, the argument I always hear is that George Lucas sold Star Wars. I mean, he doesn't have a say in what they do anymore. But at the same time, you have to understand, this is a guy that created the universe. He knows what's best for it. And I think it would have been smarter for them to actually, like, you know, at least humor the idea instead of, like, going their own direction, which I don't think ended up working out too well, to be honest. That's just me. What about you, Sean?
Yeah. I mean, personally, the prequels. So, you know, I mean, yeah, he did the originals, but, you know, the prequels, I mean.
Look, here's the thing about the prequels, and we'll talk about them real quick here. They're not terrible films. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. The episode 1 is...
Oh, God.
It's terrible. I the only redeeming quality of that movie is Ewan McGregor and Darth Maul. That's it. There's nothing else in that movie that's redeeming to me. I actually really, really, really enjoy Attack of the Clones. I like the relationship and the kind of chick flickness of that movie. granted, the chemistry between Anakin and Padme is horrendous.
Yeah.
But I'm one of the few people, I'm in the minority, that I really enjoy the characterization that Hayden Christensen did for Anakin Skywalker, because to me it made sense, you know, of him being a wooden, very wooden type of character because of who he was going to become and him trying to hold down his emotions that he's not allowed to have. So to me, at the age of, how old was I? 15 when that movie, 15, 16 when that movie came out, I was like, okay, he's trying to hold back his emotion. That's how I looked at that character. That's why he seems so wooden. And to me, that's what I gather with it. And I really enjoyed that movie. Plus, I was a huge Boba Fett fan as a kid. So seeing Boba Fett and Jango Fett was, I remember my mom coming and home and bringing home a magazine, the Star Wars, it was like Star Wars Insider or something like that. And it had Jango Fett on the front. I was, oh, holy crap. So I got real excited about that kind of stuff. But, you know, I when I get down to it, the trilogy, the prequel trilogy was not all that bad. I think it had a bad taste in some people's mouths because it wasn't the original trilogy. It just wasn't. I mean, and it wasn't going to be. The original trilogy holds such a special place in everybody's heart, you know, especially for those who grew up during that time frame. I experienced them in the 90s. So come the 2000s, 99, 2000s, I was the perfect age. I mean, I was 13 when episode one came out. So I was the perfect age. That's who it was aimed for. And I still didn't like that movie, you know. But when it came to episode two and episode three, I mean, episode three to me is top two Star Wars movie. And there's so much emotion, so much power in those scenes between Anakin and Obi-Wan. There's so much about that movie I love. So to me, I don't think that George Lucas did all that bad with the prequels. So when it comes back around to the sequels and they're like, yeah, we're going to throw out his ideas, regardless if you like the prequels or not, I still don't see why that's something that should have been done. You know, I mean, I know we've heard, you know, little tidbits that the sequel trilogy that he outlined was going to get into the microscopic, you know, detail of what the Force is, but that's George Lucas. And I mean, I think to me, I would have rather seen what George Lucas had in mind as opposed to what Kathy Kennedy led Lucasfilm did. That's just me, because I'm the kind of person, I mean, come on, I stood up for months and months, I think probably all three of us did, and shouted, you know, creative freedom when it comes to Zack Snyder and his Justice League. Yeah. You know, so we're shouting about that, but then we're sitting here saying, oh, you know what? They're fine with throwing out George Lucas's ideas, despite the fact that it's his universe that he built. I don't like that idea. Now I get that he sold it. I completely understand. And I'm sorry I talk a lot, but I get that he sold it. But he was staying on, and they were allowing him to be there to be kind of a guide to help them through the transition. And they went and basically were like, look, no, none of it. And he was like, how about this? And they're like, no. And he's like, well, how about this? And they're like, no. I mean, I don't know how it went, but you know, the simple fact is they're like, yeah, come on, help us through. You know what? Never mind. Get out of here. That just seems wrong to me. I don't know. Maybe not for you, but to me it does.
I understand where you're coming from like that. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, it's like, don't be a douche. you know, if you're going to do something, then do it. You know, if you're going to invite him on, then invite him on. Even if you're not going to use his work, fine. But if you're inviting him on to, you know, to add to the storytelling or to the overall narrative, fine, do that. But follow it through, yeah. Completely understand. And yeah, where you're coming from with, you know, with Zack Snyder, completely understand, you know, obviously we've all rallied behind him and said, you know, creative freedom. And yeah, I mean, personally, I love Snyder's work, and generally I love Lucas's work, but I mean, where he was going with Star Wars, in my opinion, not very good. I mean, obviously, as a creative, he should have the right to explore that, but as we come back to, he sold the property. So it's kind of one or the other. The midichlorians thing, not for me. let's leave it there. But I don't know. Like, personally, I think out of all of the prequels, episode one is my favorite because it's the least ridiculous. I think Hayden Christensen is a terrible actor, and I don't think he was very wooden. I think that in every single scene, he was trying his best not to cry. It's like he was constantly. I was like, come on, I want to watch that. That's all it was. Like, red eyes, guys constantly got a mopey face. Come on. Like, and obviously everything that's come out about Ray Park at the moment as well makes things a bit...
Yeah, I don't want to touch on that. It's just...
Yeah. But, out of all three of them, I'd say episode one's the best.
Sorry, I know, Marcus, you probably want to jump in here, but that seems to be the sentiment that I find. It's either you enjoy the prequel trilogy but don't like episode one, or you really don't like the prequel trilogy but you like episode one. It's really bizarre how that works, but that's kind of what I've seen a lot of times. I know my co-host over on Bridging to Geekdoms, he was a kid. Like, I think he was 5 years old, 6 years old when the prequel trilogies were coming out, and he loved them all completely. But as time went on, his love for episode one has dwindled and dwindled and dwindled, because he's sitting there saying, look, I'm not a little kid anymore, and all that Jar Jar Binks crap is not good, you know? So I get it. So Marcus, your thoughts, what are you thinking here?
Okay, so this might seem a bit off topic, but what I liked about the prequels and the originals and how they differentiate each other was that they were both the same saga, but they felt like, I guess, different entities. Like, they didn't feel like extensions of each other. They felt like their own things. And that's the problem I had with the sequels, was that it felt like it was building too much off of the originals and relying on it too much. While the prequels trilogy didn't really do that as much. Like, it kind of established its own, its own story, its own characters and all that. And I guess the problem of the sequel is that it kind of relied too much on those characters we were introduced to all the way back in 77, which I guess it just weakens the new characters that they're introducing. And I think what George Lucas could have done, I'm not sure what his narrative plans were besides all the midichlorian crap. I don't like that. But I trusted that he would introduce more new characters and, build off them rather than rely on the original trilogy characters. That's what I liked about the prequels. Like, we explored a lot of characters that, even if they were in the originals, they were barely touched on. Like, Obi-Wan, we barely knew anything about him, and he felt like a completely different character, and we got to see a whole new side of him. And Anakin, too, of course. And, of course, there's new characters like Padme, Mace Windu, Jango Fett, all those characters. I really just wish the sequels had explored more into those characters that we haven't seen before, rather than relying on Luke, Han, and Leia.
Yeah, I would have to agree.
Although, to interrupt,
yeah,
Robert, you did say that they didn't particularly focus on the legacy characters that they should have done.
Yeah,
and yet now we're saying they focus too much on them. So. What's the...
Well, no, what I'm saying is I agree to a certain point, because I wanted more of the legacy characters. But, for instance, I don't think they spent enough time with Luke Skywalker. I think they spent more than enough time with Harrison Ford of Han Solo. And there wasn't quite enough of Carrie Fisher, but we understand what happened there, and that was, unfortunate what transpired. For me, when we go to the sequels and if I were to sit down, there was no sequel trilogy, and they were like, okay, you being a mega Star Wars fan, Robert, You've been a fan since the 90s. You've sat in, while you were growing up, every single weekend, you sat on your living room floor with your Millennium Falcon, your X-Wings, and you watched those movies. What do you want to see from an episode 7, 8, 9? I would have said, I want to see what Luke Skywalker had created after defeating Darth Vader. That's what I wanted. I wanted to see how he moved forward as a Jedi Master, as a Jedi Knight, whatever you want to look at him as, how he moved forward in creating a new Jedi Order. That's what I wanted to see.
Okay, I think I can get what you're saying. Like, not so much the character themselves, but like the impact they had on like the future of the franchise. Is that what you're saying? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I can agree with that sentence here then.
You know, because it, to me, you take a look at the prequels. The prequels, you know, the only legacy character they really had in that movie was Obi-Wan. And that worked because we were learning what happened and how we got to Luke, Leia, Han, Chewie, all that. That's what we were learning. It would have been nice to see the transition to, okay, post Luke, Leia, Han, and Leia, Luke, Leia, Han, and I said Leia twice, whatever, cheating. But you know, it would have been nice to see that transition away from them. So whether they did it, you know, in the first movie, they focused more on the legacy characters, but introducing the Rays, the Finns, the Poes, and through those three films, they transitioned to those characters, that would have worked. Or they could have planned, okay, we're going to do two trilogies like they initially stated. There was an interview that Kathy Kennedy did, I want to say in 2014-ish, where she said, we have plans, which now we know they had no plans, but they had plans for up to episode 12. And that would have made sense if they would have done it that way. Let's focus on the legacy characters and let them help bring in these new characters to then lead their own trilogy in 10, 11, 12. That's what I wanted to see.
Sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I wanted to see. That's, and while I agree that there's some things that they didn't, like, yeah, okay. Han, I think there was a little too much emphasis on him in episode 7 because they wanted to make him like the Obi-Wan type of figure, like Obi-Wan was in A New Hope. To me, that felt weird because that wasn't who Han was. He wasn't the mentor type, and they kind of did that with him. Leia, you know, she got a decent amount of screen time in 7 and 8, but she did a lot of nothing. You know, like she had a decent amount of screen time, but did nothing. And Luke, and I'm going to say this, and, you know, while I do agree and say that episode 8 was not written the way that I think it should have been written, or it just wasn't how it should have been, Luke, I completely understood his character, and I actually agree with the little bit of backstory that we got on what happened with Luke, why he was where he was and acted like he acted. I understand it. Do I agree that that's what I wanted to see? Absolutely not. I didn't want to see it. But I do agree that, hey, if this would have happened, that is in the characterization of what Luke was in the first three movies that he was in. So it makes sense that he would run away like that from what he's learned, what he's experienced, what he's done. What hurts that is all the little stuff that they put in between, which they didn't do much, but they put a lot of little stories and literature and video games where Luke Skywalker, his character developed differently, and him running away in 8 then doesn't make sense. So there's a lot when it comes to the legacy characters that they failed on. They really failed on. That's all there is to it. I love Finn. When it comes to the new characters, I love Finn. Finn, I wanted, like, after seeing The Force Awakens, I was like, I can't wait to see more of him. Rey, I never was a fan of Rey. I couldn't get into her. There was just something about the whole thing. I was intrigued with the, who is Rey? Is she a Skywalker, Palpatine, Kenobi, a nobody, which I hate that concept of being a nobody. Sorry, anybody who does like it. I think it's horrible because that's not what Star Wars is. Star Wars was never about being a nobody. Star Wars has always been about a legacy. Mm-hmm. And that's why in the Skywalker film saga, that is not a place to put, hey, anybody can be Force sensitive. That is a place where you say, no, she's a Skywalker. No, she's a Kenobi. Like, that's just the way it should work. If you want to do the nobody thing, go do your own saga. But the Skywalker series was always about legacy. It was about, who are you? Who are you? How do you fit into this whole story? Because the story is about the Skywalkers. So how do you fit and connect to that? That's what the saga has always been about. So I know I've gone off on a crazy tangent here, but when it comes down to it, the characters, the writing of the characters, they did focus too much on building up these new characters, I think, immediately. Because when they announce these movies, they're not announcing it for the children, for the new viewers. These movies were announced for the kids who are now adults, who are in their late teens, who are in their 40s, in their 50s, who experienced Star Wars in 77, who experienced it in the re-release in 95, who experienced the prequels in 99. That's when that release happened. That's who that the whole idea of this sequel trilogy was for. But they switched it and turned it around and said, no, you know what? We're going to introduce new characters because we need to make sure that this saga can continue for a long time. And kids need to be excited about it, not just the old people and the adults. And I think that was wrong for them to do. I don't know. What's your take on it?
Got it, Sean. I need to think.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that you've just said there, Robert.
There is. Yeah. Like I said, I talk a lot. I apologize. I know you've never been on a show with me, Sean. I just talk.
That's cool.
If you ever need to tell me to shut up, just tell me. Hey,
I mean, lots of things for me to address. So basically, you know, going back to the Luke thing in The Last Jedi, I also understand exactly what happened, but I agree with the writing decisions that were made in that film. I can see Marcus's face is twisting right now.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's like I see the road that he went down where he was like, I see evil in this kid. I need to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And at the last second, it didn't work. So he was like, basically, crap. I've gone against what what it is to be a Jedi. I've got to get out of here. And so basically just left. So he became a bit of a myth, bit of a legend, and you know, I think that works. It works perfectly with the narrative that they were saying. It's like Kylo Ren, you know, he was the grandson of possibly the worst Sith in, you know, the most evil Sith that the galaxy had ever seen. Why wouldn't there be a strain of evil in him? Why wouldn't Luke try and stop that spark before it blew up? And why wouldn't he then feel the guilt of essentially murdering his nephew? So, I mean, there's a lot to it, but and I you know, as I say, I agree with where they went with it. And what else did you say? There was other things that you said that I wanted to touch on. You mentioned about... I've lost myself now. I've lost my train of thought.
Can I counter your Luke Skywalker
point? Yes, you can. I mean, okay. You can try, but yes, you can.
Okay. So my whole problem isn't with the whole guilt thing going into hiding and becoming a hermit. I think in a way that's kind of reflective of what Obi-Wan did and Yoda. And I think it's totally in character for Luke to actually go into hiding for doing something horrible. But what he did, I just thought it was totally like out of character, trying to kill Ben in his sleep. I think that was totally out of left field. It didn't make any sense for me because he saw Darth Vader, his father, who was already a corrupted Sith, ruling next to the Emperor, ruling over the Empire. He sees his dad, and he's still willing to turn him to light in Return of the Jedi. But then you see in in The Last Jedi that he's trying to kill his nephew who hasn't even done anything yet. It just didn't make any sense to me. Like, it felt out of character. Like, if he could see the light inside Darth Vader, who'd been corrupted for years and who had killed, like, I think literally millions of people, how could he just go on Ben like that? How could he just, like, attack him when he wasn't guilty of anything? He was just an innocent kid who probably didn't even know his power. That's the issue I had with Luke in the sequels.
Here, let me counter that real quick, because that is an argument that everybody always brings up, and I'm with Sean here. I agree that the characterization based on what we knew at the time made sense for Luke Skywalker, because while he had a fleeting moment of that fear in him, you have to realize that he never had proper Jedi training. He trained with Yoda for what I think is like determined to be like a month, 2 months or something like that on Dagobah. And, you know, he didn't have, you know, a lot of formal Jedi training and understanding. He started late, and his fear, which he still utilized, he uses his fear and anger in The Return of Jedi. Like, he uses it to help defeat Vader. He stops himself from going too far when he notices, oh, geez, I'm to the point of no return. Like, I'm almost to the point of no return here. As Vader lay before him, he looks at his hand, sees that he's turning into his father. That's when he pulls himself away. He's hit that moment before in his character development. At moments, he's hit that point. And it kind of happens again because he realizes and notices Ben could become the next Darth Vader. In the darkness that he sees in him, it is possible that his nephew could become the next Darth Vader. And what better way to stop that than killing that child at this point in time? But it is a fleeting moment. It is something that comes and goes like that. And he's ashamed of himself because he knows better, because he's been to that point in the past. It just so happens that it's that moment that Ben realizes, oh, crap, my uncle's going to kill me, or so he thinks. And you see... we see it three different times in that movie. We see it from Luke's perspective. We see it from Kylo's perspective. We also see the real perspective, the real thing, I believe. I think it's three times. I haven't watched The Last Jedi enough, I don't think. But we see it from each perspective because in each story, there's some truth to it. You know, in Ben's eyes, Luke became essentially evil. He became the bad guy to him. Right. And Luke Skywalker's eyes, you can tell the sadness when you watch that scene. You can see the discouragement, the depression, like how he's depressed that he even considered that at that moment. You also have to take into consideration all of the stuff that we weren't told because of the poor character development and story development of the sequel trilogy, that Snoke was in the background manipulating Ben this entire time. You know, Leia mentions it a little bit in The Force Awakens, but that entire time, Ben is being manipulated, which is building the darkness inside of him. So to me, it's not out of character for Luke to do that. It makes sense because at that point, and I read the Rise of Kylo Ren comic series, which is a highly disappointment when it comes to a comic series. It gave us absolutely nothing in regards to the story, but it did. I mean, it gave us a little bit that, you know, even Kylo was kind of like, shit, what did I do? You know, what am I doing? So it there's a lot there when it comes to Luke. Should he have done that? No, but he realized that. And he, you got to remember, he never had the formal training. And these are moments and things that are going to happen to somebody like that. And you can even go back and take a look at those Jedis who have had training. You know, look at Anakin. Look at Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan had moments throughout his story arcs between the prequels, the Clone Wars, and everything like that. There are moments where they get to that edge of leaving or not doing what Jedi would do, not following the Jedi way, but they always pull themselves back. And that's what makes them a Jedi, because they're able to catch their mistakes before they happen. And that's how I've always looked at it. I think, Sean, you probably want to add to it at all. I don't know.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. And in fact, there is something that I do agree with you on, that Snoke came out of left field all of a sudden. There was no...
Oh, yeah, that's...
There was no build up to him, and he was just all of a sudden there, and then all of a sudden he was dead, and it's like, what?
Yeah, that was kind of disappointing. I mean, let's kind of step away from the legacy characters. Let's talk about the new characters. I mean, we've only hit a couple of the points I wanted to hit here at this point, but let's talk about the new characters. Rey, Finn, and Poe, in particular, those characters. What did you think about them, the introduction and the use of those characters?
Well,
or do you want to say?
You want me to go first or you go first?
Yeah, you go first, it's fine.
Okay, like you said, Robert, I did not like Rey at all. Just another desert kid, except she had no personality. Besides being angsty over not knowing who her parents were, or her parentage, and all that. And I get it, they're like doing the whole thing that the trilogy does and mirrors, each trilogy mirrors each other in a way. So I get what they were doing, they were redoing the Lost Soul, trying to become something greater. The thing with Rey is, though, I felt like she didn't have any downfalls throughout the whole trilogy. I mean, sure, there are moments where you're like, dang, you kind of messed up there, but like, not really. Like, okay, so you think about it, like how Anakin and Luke got their hand chopped off, for instance. Like, they both got their hand cut off in the trilogy. You don't see a moment like that happen with Rey. It just seems like everything seems to go her way, even though she's the protagonist of the trilogy. She's supposed to be the challenged the most, but it feels like she's just reacting to everything. It's not the other way around. It's not character driven around her. It's just her reacting to stuff that's happening. And I think that's the problem with her. She didn't really feel like a character at all to me. She just felt like I guess a placeholder for a basic hero. And then as for Finn and Poe, I think they both had potential, but they were just overshadowed by all the stuff going on with Rey and Kylo. I think the problem there was that they were so focused on that one storyline that they kind of overshadowed everything else. Like, all the stuff with the First Order and the Resistance, I thought it was kind of brushed over in the trilogy. Like, it could have been explored more, in my opinion, but the idea of Finn, for example, Stormtrooper who becomes good, I mean, we haven't seen that before in a trilogy, but it's like, it's utilized so badly after The Force Awakens. Like, he doesn't do anything. I could talk about that casino scene in No. Last Jedi. Oh God!
I'd probably fall asleep even talking about it. I literally fell asleep in the theater on premiere night during the Canto Bite stuff. Like, I, being as big of a Star Wars fan as I am, that bored me to death. The first watch, like, it was not interesting at all. But go ahead.
yeah, but it just felt like very political to me when they did that, and it told me, yeah, they don't know what the hell they're doing with him. In The Last Jedi, and then, of course, The Rise of Skywalker came around. Again, they didn't know what they were doing. I think another problem with the main trinity of that trilogy, because, of course, in the prequels, we got Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Padme. Then this originals, we've got Luke, Han, and Leia. I feel like another problem was they didn't spend enough time together, the trinity for the sequels. Like, they could have had that chemistry, but they didn't do anything together, so it just felt weird seeing them working together in The Rise of Skywalker, because it didn't seem like they really knew each other that well, besides Finn and Rey. It seemed like Poe was just kind of shorned in there, because he was buddies with Finn. And as for Poe, like, he just felt like a Han knockoff to me. I don't want to be mean to your Poe fans, but like, he just felt like a Han knockoff to me. So, yeah, that's my opinion on the protagonist. I mean, I could talk about Kylo Ren, but I'm assuming you save that for later, because you listed those three protagonists. Yeah. So,
Interesting points there.
I mean, real quick, you know, you talked about Rey, and I kind of want to touch on Rey real quick here before you get into it, Sean. I agree 100% with you, Marcus. Not only that, and no offense to Daisy Ridley, like, there's really no, I don't mean any ill will, because I'm sure she's an amazing person, but she was not built to lead in a film. She just isn't.
I think her acting was great, but like,
I don't think it does. I just don't think her acting was good enough to lead a massive blockbuster like Star Wars. There was nothing about her that I was like, I want to see where she goes. I want to see, and that's why so many people. And I think that's why so many people were so hung on the parentage of who she is, that when Rian Johnson was like, she's a nobody, everybody was like, oh.
So there's nothing interesting about
her. There's nothing interesting about Rey anymore. You know? Yeah. And that was kind of, I think, a big problem with that character there. And I don't know, maybe Sean, you can kind of shed some light on why I should like Rey more than that, because I think you probably like her for some reason, but
so I do like her.
Yeah,
surprise,
of course.
Surprise. But I mean,
it's because she's British, isn't it?
That's exactly that. How did you know? We all stick together. Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely as a British person, I know her personally. So
makes sense.
Me, her, and the Queen. So, I mean, I do like it. I think that, you know, it. I thought obviously they were trying to go down the path of in seven of, oh, she's, you know, she's a, she's basically, she's one of the families, she's one of the members of any of the families, take your pick. Mm-hmm. So the point they did that, I was kind of like, you know, why does she have to be of one of these families? You know, I realize it's about Star Wars, but that's a big galaxy out there. You know, why does it have to be one of these specific bloodlines? But I went with it. You know, I'm enjoying myself. Then you know, Rian Johnson comes along, and I'm like, "Hey, I like you." And then he says, "You know, raise an Obi-Wan." I'm like, "Boom! That's what I'm talking about." And because I think, yes, you know, as you say, it's about legacy, but a legacy has to start somewhere. Why can't it start with Rey? Who says we're not going to get another X amount of films down the line where we're going to find out what happens with her lineage? You know, I'm fine with that. Let's do it. You know, there could be nobodies, and, you know, her use of the Force was, you know, completely different to how it had been previously. You know, she's basically telling people what to do. Nobody's done that before like that. I'm taking it. And, you know, she's got this raw power that everyone's, you know, kind of struggling with. And I think, you know, and I liked where it was going. And then obviously for J.J. Abrams to come back and be like, oh yeah, so, you know, she's a Palpatine. Uh-huh. And now Daisy Ridley saying, oh yeah, you know, there is connections what am I trying to say? To Kenobi, that's it, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like,
let's pick one, you know.
Pick one, yeah.
At least Rian Johnson knew what he was doing, you know. He was like, he had his own idea, and he was like, I'm running with it. And now, post the trilogy, we've got essentially three ideas in the running, one of which is completely ignored because J.J. Abrams took over again. So she's either a Palpatine or she's a Kenobi. I mean, what's going on? I think as an actress, I think she's great. She, you know, personally, I think that she held her own. And yes, although she didn't have any sort of big moments of struggle, do you really need to have struggle to, you know, to, what am I trying to say? To see the highs? You know, do you need to see the low to see the highs? Or who says you can't just keep on going on an upwards incline?
Yeah.
Because, no. You know, she does have Finn who's making all these mistakes, and Poe that's just, you know, trying to do whatever the hell he can. And then obviously there's Kylo, who's basically mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake. He's on the way down regardless. So, you know, there is a mirroring sort of situation going on. So, I mean, that's how I see it, but...
No, you're not. I mean, you're not completely wrong. Sorry, my other camera went out here. I got to fix this real quick. You're not completely wrong because, you know, she didn't need to have the lowest of lows. She started at the lowest of the lows. I mean, she was... you know, alone, utterly, completely alone on Jakku. She had nothing. She, you know, was barely able to survive because, you know, just by scavenging and all that. So she didn't need to go lower than that. She didn't have to. But when it comes down to it, I look at it like this, that she did not, in my opinion, she did not even come close to having much of a much character development between episode 7, beginning of episode 7 and the end of episode 8. She learned a little bit, but she was still, I'm a loner, essentially. You know, like that's kind of how she was by the end of episode 8. And to me, that just kind of bothered me in regards to her character. You know, you take a look at Luke Skywalker from episode 4 to the end of The Empire Strikes Back, there is so much character development with him, you know, because, yeah, he wants to go out and he believes that there's more for him out there. Well, he finds out, yes, there is more for him out there. And not only that, but you are from a lineage of a great Jedi warrior, and you're going to become the next great Jedi warrior. And guess what? You're going to be the one that saves us all. Like, that's essentially what happens with Luke. With Rey, you don't get that. You know, with Rey, it's, I'm a nobody. I live in a desert. My family's out there. Okay. Oh, look, there's something for me. The resistance. Okay. Oh, wait, you want me to go find this Luke Skywalker guy? Maybe he'll have answers. He goes, Luke. She goes, Luke, no, there's no answers for you. No, I'm not telling you anything. No, get away. No, leave. You want to become a Jedi? Why? Jedi suck. No, you don't want to do this? All right, get out of here. Bye. And she leaves. And she's like, okay, I'm going to go face Kylo Ren by myself. She goes and faces Kylo Ren. You're a nobody. Oh, okay, I'm a nobody. Where's the character development there? There's nothing there. There's nothing to build off of to be excited about for that, because you're just like, for 4 hours plus, we haven't learned anything new or exciting about her. Yeah, she has a weird potential with the Force. We'll dive into that more. Don't just say, oh, look, she breaks some rocks and she's angry a lot. That's all you get, you know. Like, it's just, to me, it was poor character development on her part. And what that comes down to is not that JJ failed in episode 7, and I'm not even going to say Rian Johnson failed in episode 8. Lucasfilm failed when they were going forward with this sequel trilogy, because they should have sat down and said, okay, our main character, our main protagonist is Rey. We want her to get to here. Okay? But there's going to be little checkpoints that she has to hit to get to that. What are they? They didn't do that. They're just like, all right, JJ, here. Oh, that's cool. So there's something mysterious about her. Cool. Hey, Rian, why don't you continue that story? No, thanks. I'm going to do my own thing. She's a nobody. Well, everything that was set up in 7 is now meaningless and kind of separates the two movies from each other in a sense. Then you get to episode 9 and they're like, hey, JJ, come back. He's like, all right. Yeah, Rian kind of screwed everything up. So my original plan was to have Rey be a somebody. So I'm going to make her be a somebody. How about a Palpatine? You know, like, that's what happened. And it was kind of like, there was no cohesion and thought on how to develop these characters. Episode 8, to me, you change a few things in that movie, that is a far better start to a trilogy than a middle chapter to a trilogy. Far better start. Because that's what it feels like. It feels like a start to a three-part series. It doesn't feel like a middle chapter at all. There's nothing about it that feels like a middle chapter. And that's that. They did the same thing with Finn. Finn was going to be a fantastic character, and they relegate him to going on a pointless adventure with another pointless character.
Oh yeah,
to get a bite with nothing. Like, it had no relevance. Nothing that happened at all in that 40 minutes of Canto Bite. Nothing. I mean, had any impact.
Yeah, it did go on slightly too long, but I did like Finn. And I did like Rose. I think they were great characters. And then I also liked the name I can't remember, but also, what's his name?
DJ?
Yeah, the lockpick guy. What's his name?
Who turns out to be a con. The what guy?
It's not really a lockpick guy, but you know.
His name in the movie is DJ, played by Benicio del Toro.
That's the one. Yeah.
The guy that betrayed them. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and they had potential, but they were just not utilized properly. You know, Rose had no character development. She's like, the beginning of the movie, I hold out hope. I have hope. Okay. At the end of the movie, you must have hope to survive, essentially, is her whole thing. You know, but she's more sappy with it, with the love thing and kissing Finn and all that stuff. But that's basically her arc, is just to be like that ray of like hope. Like, look, I'm somebody who believes that as long as we fight for ourselves and we stick together, it'll all be good. That's her whole thing from the start to the end of that movie. Why didn't they start her off better than that? Like, it seemed like they were going to. It seemed like they were going to, where she, because of her childlike belief in like everybody's good, and DJ's like, no, you're an idiot if you think that. I was like, okay, cool. They're going to take this in a cool direction. But then her outlook doesn't change at all. So
it was,
it was, to me, it just seems like there is not enough focus on, okay, let's make this make sense as a trilogy, but let's try and shock people as much as possible. At least that's what episode 8 to me felt like, because episode 8, just, it was one shocking moment after another. You know, oh, look, Luke Skywalker isn't really there on the planet. That's just a projection of him. You know, oh, look, you know, Luke Skywalker is an asshole now. You know, oh, look, Snoke died. Oh, look, like, oh, look, Rey's a nobody. Like, it was just Ryan trying to shock everybody at every moment that he could possibly shock everybody. And that's not what Star Wars is. And I'll even go one further and say what JJ was doing with Star Wars is not what Star Wars is either, because Star Wars was not about a mystery box. It was never about this, oh, who is this person? You know, where is this person from? Like, when it came to Luke Skywalker, it was Luke is from Tatooine. Luke has a father who was a Jedi who fought in the Clone Wars next to Obi-Wan Kenobi. He was a good friend. And then a Jedi that Obi-Wan knew, you know, killed his father, hunted down the Jedi and killed them. That's all we knew. We didn't need to know anything else. We're like, okay. So the moment, like, we thought we had Luke Skywalker's background. The moment that Vader's like, no, I'm your father, we're like, what? No. And even in 70 or in 80, when that happened, people questioned it. You know, like, you can see reports, you can see news articles and stuff online. You can find the stuff where they're like, you know, when this reveal happened, nobody believes it. Is it true? Is that really going to be what it, like, that's what they were questioning, because even after the fact, they thought Vader is such an evil villain that he could be lying and it would make sense for him to lie. But what JJ was trying to do was trying to set a reveal like that up. And that's not what Star Wars ever was. Star Wars was like, here's a story of a person, and if there's a reveal to be had, cool, you know? And if it shocks everybody, cool. So they really approached the sequel trilogy in such a poor manner, and that's what disappoints me, because like I said earlier, I was excited. JJ, being a student of Lucas and Spielberg, and you know, Rian Johnson just being influenced so much by Star Wars to become a filmmaker, you sit there and you sit and you think, like, and that's the best you guys could do? You know, did you really pay attention to what you learned there? And that's my opinion. I don't know what you guys think about all of that.
You've got some good points on me. Yeah. Like, the direction that the sequels went in was completely a different direction than the prequels or even the original trilogy. Yeah.
I always say this whenever I'm talking about Star Wars and why I don't like the sequels. I always felt like the first two films of that trilogy were both set up, because like it doesn't work like that. The Rise of Skywalker had to carry so much of that narrative of the whole trilogy, just because they set it up for two whole films, and it didn't work. It was too much. Like, they didn't establish their characters well enough, to the point where it felt like it was paying off in The Rise of Skywalker. I think that was the main problem there. They didn't know how to, they didn't know how to, like, move forward. All their characters were just kind of reacting to stuff happening around them. They weren't growing as characters. I said it before, they're just very reactive. They're not growing as characters on their own accord. They're growing on accord to the narrative, which I don't think makes for a good Star Wars story.
Hmm. That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if JJ had got a trilogy of his own, and Ryan had got a trilogy of his own, that would have been fine. Even if they weren't
Yeah, definitely. Because, like, there's just a lack of cohesion there. Because, like,
yeah,
you see it's like going in one direction, and then Rian Johnson takes another direction, and then JJ's like, wait, let me take it back again. It's like, you gotta figure out what you're doing. That's why, like, Trevorrow's script, the alleged leaked script, that's why I like that, because it stuck with what Rian Johnson established. It didn't try to revert things back like The Rise of Skywalker did. And I think that that's what that trilogy needed to do, because not only was it concluding the story, it was also doing, like, I guess, damage control or whatever. So, Yeah, it was just too much to carry for a trilogy.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, we haven't really talked a lot about The Rise of Skywalker, and you're right on with them squeezing way too much in it. I remember going to the theater last year and coming out, I was like, holy crap, that was amazing. I cried. I did. I cried in the movie, but that's coming from a fan since 1995 who has lived with those characters probably more than 95% of the population of this world, because of they were my friends growing up. I say this, I've said this on my podcast so many times, like, to me, Han, Luke, Leia, Chewbacca, you know, Anakin, Obi-Wan, they were my friends when I was a kid, because that's who I hung out with on the weekends. That's who I would get home from school Friday night and I would throw in A New Hope or watch it on television if it was on HBO or something. Like, that's what I did. And the fact that, you know, they were like, The Rise of Skywalker is the final, you know, installment of the Skywalker saga. I went in there and I was like, this is going to suck, because I could be emotional and I'm going to cry. Like, I know it's going to happen. And I did. I actually cried in two moments there in that movie. And, you know, I sat there and I came out of the theater. I was like, man, it was good. So then I went again with my kids, because I don't take my kids the first time I see a movie, because I'm very picky about being disturbed during a film, especially the first time I see it. So I went by myself with my friends, and then I took my kids the next day, and we have a big family event. That's the one thing I've loved about Star Wars, that when it was coming out every year, it was kind of like a tradition with my family, like, once a year, let's go see Star Wars. So we went and saw it, and I choked up, but I didn't quite cry, because at that point I'm starting to realize and pick out all the issues with the movie. And that's it. I saw it that second time, and I didn't watch it again until it came out on Disney Plus, I think it was. It came out, and I watched it again, and I sat there just appalled. I'm like, why did I like this movie 4 months ago? You know, it's not a terrible movie. It's got a lot of cool moments. I really do enjoy a lot of things that happen in that movie, but it's so rushed. You know, again, Finn just underutilized. He yells Rey about 50 times in that movie, and that's all he does. Rey, that's all he does. Hey, Rey, I got something to tell you. What?
Oh, never mind.
Like, you know, like, he's given nothing, and, you know, it was disappointing. It was really disappointing. And one thing that we saw, and I kind of want to bring up what John Boyega said this past week, because it's true. He was essentially hired to pander to the diversity crowd, the people that scream diversity in films. I don't think that was the intention by JJ at first, but as the sequel trilogy went on, that's all he became. You can definitely tell, and regardless of what you think about The Last Jedi, that movie has so much diversity in it, without a doubt, it was all pandering. The amount of different characters, like, there is so much in there. They purposely, and again, I'm not saying that I don't want this in my movies, but make it make sense. Make there be a reason. Give them characters that make sense. You know, like Laura Dern's character, while they don't say it in the movie, prior to the movie coming out, they're like, hey, we got an LGBTQ character in the movie. Woohoo! Okay, good. So is it going to be part of the story? Or are you just saying it just so you can get the LGBTQ crowd to come see the movie? And that's what it was. They were pandering to that crowd to come see that movie because that aspect of the character had nothing to do with the movie. You know, then you have the Rose aspect, the Asian audience. You know, Poe was already in it, who was from the Hispanic side. You have Finn in it already for the African American or the black side. So you take that and you kind of they molded that from the Last Jedi in the Last Jedi. And I mean, this was something that was said, and so many people, and I saw your head, Sean, like, no, but it really was. The more you sit there and watch, the more you start to see how it is very, very much used to please the diversity fans and or crowds. It really is. And that's not taking away from that. I'm not going to sit there and say I don't want that because it's not the case. Like I said, I want to see if you're going to put somebody like Finn in and you want a strong representation of a black man, give him a strong representation, give him something to do, you know, make it mean something. You know, if you're going to sit there and shout on the at the top of your lungs, look, we have somebody that is an LGBTQ character in a movie prior to the movie coming out. Actually have that be a point or a reason in the movie. Don't go out of your way to say, hey, this is here, and just do it so you get people to sit in the seats and pay the money to watch it. That's what I'm saying.
You know, I totally agree with that. I feel like that's a problem a lot of movies have. I'm not going to say, I'm like you're saying, representation is important, but it needs to be represented in a way that's, you know, actually believable and well done. Like, okay, I'm going to go on a bit of a side note here. I don't know if you guys watch Stranger Things, but there's a character called yeah, I know Sean knows I love that show, but there's a character called Robin who comes in season 3, and I remember she was hyped up like the whole season. A lot of people were misled. They thought, oh, she's going to be the new love interest for one of the characters, but she ended up turning out to be gay like near the end of the season. And I think that I always use that as a perfect example of how she should do representation. It should be, they're a well-done character, but they don't rely on that, you know, aspect of their personality as a crutch. Like, they have that part of them. It's just part of their identity. But overall, they're an amazing character, even if you were to remove that. I think that's a problem. Like, I didn't even know, what's her name, Holdo? Laura Dern's character in Star Wars?
Yeah.
I didn't even know she was part of the LGBTQ community.
Oh, I should have looked up the article before I brought it up, but it just kind of hit here while we were talking. And I remember reading that article, and you know, they came out. I think it was whenever they announced the cast or they announced the characters that are, you know, who they're playing. But it came out that, you know, hey, this character is an LGBTQ character, and then in the movie you can see moments, and people fight me on this all the time. But there are those moments between her and Leia that you kind of could be like, okay, they're just friends. But that look or the way she held her hand just a little bit longer, you could tell that there was something a bit more there. And I would have been ecstatic if they built on that and said, look, after Han left, Leia went out and was like, hey, let's party, you know? they didn't expand on it. And it just kind of then leaves the fandom divided in a way, because then you have the people like me who are like, did you see that? Pretty sure Leia could have been messing around with her. But then you have people like, no, not at all. No. It's like, well, they did come out and say Laura Dern's character was LGBT. No, it doesn't matter. They could just be friends. And it kind of split the fandom. You had people fighting about that. And that's just not what they should be doing. You know, the beauty of what George Lucas created, his, you know, if you think about it, his characters were diverse. they're aliens. I mean, they're all diverse. Yeah. Everything that Lucas created was diverse. And, you know, bringing Lando in episode 5 wasn't a, hey, look, we got a black man. It was, hey, look, it's Billy Dee Williams being all suave and stuff like that. Like, that's what was so about it. It was, he had a reason. He had a solid arc in just one movie. And then it continued in the next film. You know, you look at it, and Leia, look at Leia's representation as a woman, the strong woman. Again, you know, he had a diverse cast. He had a diverse story that utilized his characters the best way possible, whether they were woman, you know, black, straight, man, alien, big hairy dog, walking carpet, whatever you want to call it. You know, like, he utilized everything the right way, whereas the sequel trilogy, Disney-fied it, and they pandered, because that's what Disney does. Yeah. I mean, you take a look at what they've been doing for the better part of a decade now, and that's what they're doing. They are pandering, and I'm shocked that they don't get called out on it more. I give a lot of credit to John Boyega for doing that, because John Boyega, I mean, Disney's one of the biggest companies in Hollywood, and he basically was like, hey, Disney, yeah, stop it. You know, like, cut it out. But you know, when you think about it, somebody had to do it. And I think it was a good thing that he did, because you start to then sit back and realize those people who haven't seen that, they sit back and go, holy crap, he's right. He is talking some truth here. And it's a shame, because the sequel trilogy, again, I don't hate it. I love so much of what came from it. I am a huge fan of The Force Awakens. I really, really enjoy that movie for what it is. The Last Jedi is an enjoyable film in itself. It doesn't fit the trilogy format, in my opinion, but it's an enjoyable film. And then you jump to The Rise of Skywalker, and that's kind of where it starts to fall off. But again, there's so much good with it. Like, I love the lightsaber battle and the Death Star wreckage. I think it is fantastic. I love Han Solo. I love the memory of Han Solo being what pulls Kylo back from the darkness, because it is alluded to in episode 7 that he is the only one that can do it, because he is his father, and there's the payoff 2 movies later. I like that. So there's a lot of stuff I like about it. It's just, I think it is the weakest of the trilogy, but that's not a fair assessment, only because really, if you think about it, the trilogy as a whole, when you look at each individual movie, they're good movies. But when you think of it as a whole, I think the trilogy fails in a way. And that's kind of what, you know, we're jumping to here now is, do the Star Wars sequels fit within the overall saga? And with the exception of having Luke and Leia and Han in it, you know, in bits and pieces, I don't think it fits within the Skywalker saga. I mean, do you feel like the whole Rey being the one that finally defeats Palpatine as something that should have been done? Like, Palpatine was dead. He was dead. Lucas said he was dead. Yeah, we had in the books or in the comics the clones of Palpatine coming back at some point in the Dark Horse comics. But, you know, Lucas always said Anakin was the chosen one. He defeated Palpatine. That was creating balance in the Force. Palpatine should have stayed dead. And I agree with that. I'd like the idea of bringing him back as a clone, but there was not enough discussion on that in the movie to say, look, this isn't the Palpatine you remember. This is a clone. But then they kind of ruined it by saying, but the old Palpatine's essence is inside of him. And it's like, all right, yeah, now you're getting kind of weird here. Now, the nice thing about it is it doesn't tarnish, but it's a little bit of a stretch. It doesn't tarnish Anakin Skywalker's legacy by being the chosen one. Because, like I said earlier, the whole saga is based off of legacy. It's based off of, you know, the legacy of the Skywalkers. So the legacy, the teachings, the falls, the rises, the highs of the Skywalkers are what lead Rey to finally defeat Palpatine. So in a way, Anakin's sacrifice is what pushed Luke to move forward, which helps Rey move forward, kinda, you know, to finally defeat Palpatine. But in a way, in my opinion, the sequel trilogy fits less within the Skywalker saga than the other two. Obviously, the other two sagas or trilogies do, I should say. Well, what are your thoughts?
Totally think the sequels seem to be hanging off the end of the original six movies. It doesn't feel like it fits together at all, in my opinion. I'm going to say this, and I'm going to probably offend a lot of people, but it feels like fan fiction to me. That's what it feels like. I think the main problem I had was it actually kind of, I guess, kind of counters what you said about Anakin, but I feel like it kind of undid the whole point of Anakin's character in the original six movies. I think what tied the original films together was Anakin's presence there. He was one that started it as a chosen one, being discovered by Qui-Gon, and he ended it by being the one to free the galaxy of evil. And so, I don't know, the sequels just kind of spit on that. Like, the thing that pissed me off the most was that Kylo Ren never learned that his grandfather turned back to the light at the very end of his life.
You have to believe, though, at some point he was told that.
Yeah, that's what annoys me so much. Like, I think the way they could have perfectly tied together and would have sold me on the idea that the sequels were definitely connected to the original six movies. Because if they had, like, Anakin's Force Ghost come back to Kylo, tell him, hey, man, get your shit together, stop being a dick, you know? I just wish that's what happened, because
it just kind of spits on what Anakin. See, that doesn't work, because it had to be Han Solo that pulled him back to the light. Where they should have put Anakin is in either Force Awakens or The Last Jedi. And they should have put him in there, and him, Anakin, trying to say, look, stop what you're doing. And it should have been Kylo pushing back and saying, you're wrong. You were wrong for turning back to the light. You know, the darkness is the way to go. Like, something like that. Because then you would have understood, okay, Anakin has showed up. He understands what Anakin did. He understands all of that. But he has fallen down the darkness so much. Snoke has manipulated him so much. He is evil. Like, there's no getting past that. He doesn't honor Anakin. He doesn't respect Anakin. He respects and wishes to complete what Vader did, not Anakin. And that would have been a lot more impactful in understanding and developing Kylo Ren, which we really didn't talk about, because I think Kylo Ren, Adam Driver, was fantastic in this trilogy.
He's the best in your characters, I think. Definitely.
But there was so much potential that they missed in developing him as a character and understanding his reasons behind everything, that everybody keeps saying, oh, Anakin should have been the one that turns him to the light. I disagree. Anakin should be the one that he's pushing away to fall deeper into darkness, not Luke. Anakin. I think that would have been a lot better.
That's an interesting idea, actually. I still stick with the idea that I think Anakin should have been the one. You know, I think that's an interesting way to look at it, but the fact that Anakin wasn't involved at all is what annoys me the most. Like, the fact that he had such a presence in the first six movies, and then the sequels are pretty much like, oh yeah, so he kind of died for no reason. He's back. So, yeah.
I think that obviously Kylo was almost constantly trying to win the approval of Vader, basically. Mm-hmm. Even though he's obviously dead and he's not going to talk to him or whatever. But I think that Luke should have been constantly haunted by the Force Ghost of Anakin, because of everything that has happened, basically, you know, since he tried to off Ben. He should have just been haunted by the ghost of Anakin. That should have been like that should have been the, you know, the reason why he was trying to stay hidden, basically, because it's the consistent guilt. But I mean, hello, no, great. I'm completely done with, you know, everything that happened with him, and I'm losing my train of thought again. It's late. It's 1 o'clock in the morning for me. So
okay. Well, let's move it to here. Oh,
I don't think they particularly fit in the overall saga. That was it. Yeah, okay. They're disjointed from each other and from the overall storyline.
And that's the thing. I think that's what hurts it the most, is because there was just so many eyes and so many hands in the pot trying to go in different directions that it lost its way rather quickly, because they were trying to squeeze so much into a three-movie arc. I often have said, even after The Force Awakens came out, I've often said they should have made this not episode 7, they should have made it 10, 11, and 12, and then gone back after we got all the reveals, similar to how they did the originals, and do 7, 8, and 9, and see how we got to 10, 11, and 12. I thought that would have been a cool idea, and I'm sure it's something they talked about, but yeah, I mean, you're right. There was so much, you know, things that were disjointed and not talked about well enough to move forward. Now, one last question, and, you know, try and keep your answer short. We're at an hour and a half at this point. I got to start finishing up here for getting my kids ready for bed. Where do you see the future of Star Wars going? I'm going to start with you, Marcus, on where do you think they're going to take the franchise after the mediocrity and the somewhat success of the sequel trilogy? Where do you see them moving everything at this point?
I hope they take a break from the movies, besides Rogue One. And I think Rogue One was really good, but Solo was kind of so-so. I think they should stick with what they're doing with The Mandalorian, exploring the universe through Disney Plus limited series, I guess. It helps expand the world, but it also doesn't detract from the main Skywalker story. So I think if they want to continue doing, like, you know, film or TV adaptation of Star Wars, that's the route to go. And I think Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, great men to be in charge of the franchise. They know exactly what they're doing. They have a very clear passion for it. So, yeah, I think those two should be put in charge of all those Disney Plus projects. So, yeah, Kenobi is looking good from what I've heard about it. I know it's not much, but just hearing about Kenobi, I'm pretty sure they've got good plans coming forward.
Yeah.
Sean?
I agree with what you're saying there, basically. Although I would like to see, you know, maybe a trilogy set somewhere else, you know, in the Star Wars galaxy or something, that's completely disconnected from the Skywalker saga, you know. And, you know, it's somebody else who's discovered the Force or something, or, you know, it's like maybe a more scientific version or something like that. You know, give it a different spin. I think that'd be nice. Although people push it towards, you know, oh, they're turning it into Star Trek or something like that.
This is my thought real quick here. This is my pitch to Lucasfilm to come to me and say, hey, we want you to help write a story. Here's my they, in about 5 to 10 years, go revisit and do episode 10, 11, and 12. Obviously, Rey and Finn will be main characters. We'll see Poe leading up the New Republic and all that kind of fun stuff. That's what we're going to see. The antagonist, Broom Boy. Hear me out here. Make it where in that year or two between the end of The Last Jedi and the beginning of The Rise of Skywalker, Kylo Ren took on an apprentice, Broom Boy. And much like Kylo Ren, he's, you know, during that time, he was taught to be evil. He was manipulated by Kylo Ren, just like Kylo was manipulated by Snoke. He believes that Rey is the person who killed Kylo. It's all about revenge. He believes that Rey killed Kylo, not that Kylo turned good, because who knows? Who knows about Kylo becoming a good guy? Nobody knows. Mm-hmm. You know, he turned good when helped Rey and died. Like, he didn't stop and say, hey, guys, I know, you know, First Order, look, it was cool and all, but see ya. You know, like, he went and helped Rey. So I think it would be really cool to find out that there is this character that Kylo Ren, you know, was you know, he had an apprentice, and this apprentice hides in the shadows for a number of years, honing his abilities and his skills, but holding this anger. And he goes to the ruins on Exegol. He finds his way to Exegol, and you know he that's where he learns a lot about the Sith way and everything. And you bring the Sith back finally. You know, like they never truly had the Sith in the sequel trilogy, and this would be a cool. I think it would be a cool way to move forward. It doesn't necessarily have to be Broom Boy. I just think it'd be cool to shoehorn him in somehow. But but I think that would be a cool way to do it, because you're still connected, and I know they said the Skywalker saga ended, but you're still connected to the Skywalker saga in a way, not just because Rey decides to say I'm a Skywalker, but you're still connected in a way because there's a true connection there to Kylo. So I to me, I think that would be a cool way to go. Not saying that it's going to. I think truly the way they're going to do is they're going to kind of back off from the Skywalker saga, back from the episodic films, and focus on secluded stories throughout the universe and throughout the time of Star Wars. We see that with High Republic. There was rumor that Benioff and Weiss, before they left, were going to be working on a Old Republic film or series. I think that's still going to happen, just under somebody else at this point. Obi-Wan's going to be cool. I think Obi-Wan's going to be the last legacy character that we see anything about for quite a while. Mandalorian's going to keep pushing forward, I think, which is a good idea. I mean, at that point, I think they need to kind of shift to the TV shows, though. I think that's the best route to go, especially with how they figured out an inexpensive way to shoot the Mandalorian, that big screen and everything like that. I think that's a good way to go for future, because they can start getting some creative minds in there and pumping out stuff pretty quickly, you know, and take chances. Take chances. You know, don't be so afraid to take a chance and say, oh, Star Wars fans didn't like all the CGI in the prequels, so we got to make it, you know, like, no, take chances. Say, you know what? There's a creative person who's really smart, who's really innovative. Let's see what he can do and what he can bring. If it works, great. If not, okay, let's move on to something else. That's what they should be doing with Star Wars.
Do you think they should bring back George Lucas in an advisory role?
I think they should have George Lucas come in, and he should do something big, whether it's write a TV show or something. You know, let him come to and say, look, this is something I always wanted to do, and let's do it. You know, like how George does, you know, like let him do it. Don't let him be an advisor or anything like that, because I think that's where you're going to get into trouble. I think you need to just say, okay, George, look, do you have an idea? You're going to be the showrunner on this. You're going to lead the way on this. If it doesn't do well after the first season, we're Disney. We own the property. Sorry, but you're done. If it's successful, awesome for both of us. We can move forward. I think that's what they need to do with George.
I think they need to do more like Rogue One as well. That was the best Star Wars film, in my opinion.
Dude, Rogue One was the best Disney era Star Wars film.
We could talk on it a whole bunch, and maybe next month, maybe that's what we'll do. We'll talk about the Star Wars story films that have come out, maybe, and discuss those, because I mean, this was over an hour and a half long of, and we didn't even cover everything we wanted to cover. I mean, we talked a lot, but I want to thank you guys for coming on. It was great doing our first live show here for Shooting the Sith on YouTube and on Facebook. Everybody who watched or is listening, thank you. It's great being back to this again. This is going to be a monthly show. If we start to get more Star Wars news, I'll start putting out episodes a lot more. I may do quick reviews on The Mandalorian once they start coming out and releasing. It might be a short 30-minute video of me reviewing those episodes when they come out. But other than that, thanks, guys, for coming on. I do want to quickly share and promote you guys right here, because you guys do and stuff for theculturenerd.org. It is an amazing, amazing site, guys. You guys are doing a great job over there. I give you so much credit for everything you're doing. So much of it, I find myself on here every single day looking and seeing what new stuff you guys put on here. So keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You want, I know TJ, or not TJ, sorry, Marcus, not TJ, sorry. Marcus, you can't be found on Twitter, but you need to get a Twits. You need to.
We're going to keep saying this until I get one on.
I'm going to keep saying it. And Sean, you too. You got to get on the Twitter. That's where it's at. I despise Twitter. It's so toxic, but it is a necessary evil whenever you're doing something like this. But yeah, thanks for being on, guys.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. You guys take it easy. Have a good night. Get some sleep. All that fun stuff. Stay safe.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, guys, there it is. That is the first episode, live episode of Shooting a Sith. Thank you for joining and watching. For more, go to go to spoilerverse.com. That is where you're going to find so much of the great content from Shooting a Sith, Bridging the Geekdoms, and more. Also, I'm going to throw this out here. We are looking for writers. We are looking for you. We want you, the people out there who enjoy writing, talking about pop culture, doing reviews on movies, video games, TV shows, all that fun stuff. We want you. So please head over to spoilerverse.com. Find either the Join Us tab or find this article here. We're looking for writers. We're looking for people who are passionate, who are willing to be part of a growing podcast network / pop culture site. With all that said, guys, thanks for watching. You can find us. Oh, hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, all that fun stuff. You can also find the show, the audio show, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all that fun stuff. But with all that said, thank you for joining. Thank you for watching. I'll talk to you all next month. Bye.